Package isn't available or ready to compile. There's a lot of small...
10 December.
Things that are available that may not be a particular package. Oh, I'm supposed to stay in one place. Okay.
You gotta hold that in your hand.
Yeah. Now, one thing is we had a package that was demonstrated at the last STL Linux meeting and at a SLUG meeting the month before that, NexRadix. NexRadix doesn't have all the packages that a full-blown great big package would have. Another one would be like Mepis. Generally, they refer to bigger installation sources such as the Debian package repositories and stuff. But even they don't have everything in it that you want. Okay. What comes standard may not be what you need. Sometimes you need some special features. If you use OpenBSD like I do, a lot of times the default installs of OpenBSD may not have the things that you need compiled in because they're made for security. And the junk that I want to put in may not be all that secure. Anybody else have another time when they compiled from source instead of pulling it out of apt-get or something like that? Yeah.
Development toolkits.
There we go, development. If you're going to write your own stuff, or if you want to add stuff to a package that's already going, you're first going to have to put what you want to add in there, right? Compile it, make sure it works, and then contribute your code to the project. Okay.
Any? Put a backdoor in.
There you go. Put a backdoor in it. Put it back up on the repositories. Now, don't think I need that, but if you've got a particular customer who is being a problem, maybe you might want to do that. But I wouldn't recommend it. Where do you get these source packages? Of course, the easiest way to do it is to go and get the distribution source packages. Like Debian has your regular package list, but you also have source available. The nice thing about getting it from the distribution source packages is that you can get, it'll make sure that you have the things that you need. It will change some of the code. Quite often you'll find in OpenBSD there's a couple of instructions that if you compile it to where the way you do on Linux, or a lot of packages get written for Linux, and then you want to use that on OpenBSD, it doesn't always compile exactly right, or AIX or HPUX or OpenSolaris, any of those sort of things. The packages typically are designed to be compiled on Linux. So if it's available in the distribution, then you're going to go to the maintainers or the program's website to get it if it's not available through the source packages of the distribution you have. Typically, you can go to the maintainer or program's website to get newer versions of the package. If you use Debian, if you want the latest version of the package, you got to go all the way up to Unstable or SID to get the latest and greatest, because they're going to sit there for a while until the maintainer thinks that they are stable enough to move down to the next level, and it sits there for a while before it actually gets into stable. So you got a production server, you may have to get the features you want by going to the maintainers or the program's website. All right, screen just went blank, so this talk is over with. Let's go have a drink. Another good place to go for it is SourceForge. In fact, a lot of times you'll find the maintainers don't keep it on their website. They'll keep it at SourceForge. You go to their website and read all the stuff and then go to download it, and it sends you to SourceForge anyway. So sometimes you can hit that up first and get to it quicker. What do you usually get? You usually get the source code that includes stuff like headers, the .c files. Typically, it's going to come in C and C++, written in that language. You're going to pull it down as a tar package, typically, if you're doing it for Linux or for most of the Unixes, 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 something like that. Okay, now you're going to get it in a GZ, BZ, or ZIP format. Tar, you do a tar-xz for GZ or BZIP. Somebody correct me, does that also recognize ZIP file format, the dash Z and tar? I know it'll...
Don't you use J for BZ?
I'm sorry?
Don't you use J for BZ?
J for BZ, yes. Z for GZ, but what is the one for ZIP?
You just try to do an unzip on it.
Yeah, do an unzip on it first. That's going to, typically that's going to create a directory with all the source files opened up in that directory. You're going to go into that directory to compile it. Once you've got it in there, CD in there, and I missed a slide here, but the slide that should go before here has in capital letters install, or in, and in capital letters README. Remind me to put that in there because that should go before this. And always read the file in the top level directory with capital letters install and the file with capital letters README. That'll save you a lot of headaches. A lot of times I fought an install because I did the ./configure, did a make, and it blew up, and I'm looking at all the stuff, and finally went back and read at the install and said, oh, if you're compiling it on Debian, do this. So always read the install and the README files first. Save you a tremendous amount of effort. At that point, typically, you're going to have three actions that you do. Configure, make, make install. Your ./configure may not always be there. You may just go straight to make. Typically, though, you're going to do a ./configure. What does that do for you? That goes through the system, and it goes and finds out how it should set up the make file. Where is this library is? Does it have this library? Does it have a compiler that works? Does it have all the things that I need to be able to build this package? Because we all know that very few people build the entire ball of wax. They usually add libraries. In Windows, you'd call them DLLs. To see what the options are, you do ./configure in the top level directory of where you've extracted it at, --help, two dashes, pipe that to less. Look at that before you start. That's going to tell you a lot of things, such as where to install it at, if you want to change it from where the maintainer thinks it ought to be, what compiler. A very well-known option of that is QEMU. I'm not going to ask how many people have compiled QEMU, because if you have, you're probably going to tell me how to do things. QEMU is a lot of fun to compile because it's only written for GCC 3.4 or less. You cannot compile it with GCC 4 point whatever or 4 point whatever or higher. It'll complain. It'll actually refuse to compile unless you go and get some specially built package. The guy that maintains it just doesn't want to go through the hassle of rewriting all of his code just to get it past the GCC 4. The GCC 3.4 or less is usually available as an install, and usually you have to explicitly tell it where it is. Because if you don't, it's going to try and use the 4.0, or I think we're at 4.2, something at this point with GCC, and it's not going to compile. It's going to grab at you and tell you can't do it. So use your ./configure, --help, run it through less, take a quick look at what the options are. You do this three or four times, and you're going to see a lot of the same options. --bender is typically where do you want me to put it, where does it go to run, and so forth. You can do things like, I want to put all this stuff in opt. Yeah.
Say, option bender, you mean like the capitalized variables?
Dash, you'll be, as a option to configure, you would put --configure --bin-dir=, and the path to where you wanted to have it installed at. The nice thing, if you're compiling on Linux, most of the stuff is already set. I've learned this because on an OpenBSD, you got to look at those things because they're not always in the exact same place. Even between distributions such as where Red Hat puts it compared to where Debian puts it, there can be some problems with that. You really want to put it in the same place that your distribution puts it. So if you do an apt-get install when they've already passed where you're at, and you want to go further with having to get the source code, let's face it, with Debian, in a couple of years they'll catch up with where you're at. No more than 4 or 5, right? Oh, come on, guys! Everybody here uses Debian. You know that they're always behind that much. Okay, make. This is pretty. Oh, wait a minute. Let's go back one. --configure. You run that, and it doesn't always pass. And then what you're going to look for is in where it's doing the configure. It's going to actually tell you what it is that it found wrong in the error. Yes.
At times you're going to get a lot of warning messages. Are there something for the uninitiated to be really concerned about? What level of warning message do you need to be concerned with?
Well, I wouldn't be real concerned with warning messages until you hit make and you run into problems with make. But typically, if it errors out and won't go any further, then yeah, you need to go look through those warnings. Things like can't find a GCC, that's really not a warning. That'll probably cause it to kick it out. My Nixradix distribution didn't have GCC in it. If you're using Debian, you do wasg install build-essential, and that gives you all the essential things to build a package with. Now, once you've got that set up, then when you get errors on it, you're going to look for, like QEMU depends on the graphics library, SDM. I forget, it's been a while since I compiled it. And it depends on that package. It doesn't always get that. And typically, you may have that package installed, but you don't have the development package installed. So what you're going to do is you're going to go for package foobar-devl for development. So you may have foobar installed, but it's not going to be able to compile because it needs the source code for foobar. So you're going to have to install that development package. Any questions with configure? Okay, one thing I didn't cover is configure actually creates a make file. And I forgot to look this up to make sure, but it's called make file. What configure creates is a file called make file.
Yeah, you can, just as an aside, it has a template called makefile.in that it reads and then uses that make file to actually create the final make file that's going to generate.
Yeah, so you can look at that makefile for any problems that you may have encountered. All the stuff that you saw scroll by the screen real fast, you can look in that makefile and find out what that is. Or you can run it through Wes again. Typically, if you've got something big, it may take 30, 40 seconds for a compile to run, so it may be easier to look in makefile, make your changes. Look through makefile, get all the things you think need to be fixed. Okay, back to make. So you do make, and this stuff goes and goes and goes off the screen. Most of it's going to be warnings, and you'll probably see the same warnings over and over again because the person who packaged it may not have been exactly perfect with the way your level of compiler. just like everything else in Linux, compilers tend to be a moving target. Just like Fabrice, when he created QEMU, he wrote it for 3.4 and just didn't feel like rewriting his program for 4.0, and then again for 4.1, and then again for 4.2. So you may run into that a lot. Some people just don't have the time to keep it up with the latest compiler. Next thing you're going to do is you're going to do a make install. If everything went good, don't have stopped with an error listed somewhere there, then you're going to do make install, and you're actually going to install it as root, however you want to do as root. If you have sudo, then you can do sudo make install and let it go off and run its course. If you don't have sudo, then you're going to do sudo su to root without the dash, because typically you don't need anything outside of a normal person's ability, or you just need the permissions. You're not going to need much more than what you normally can get to. So yes, you without the dash to root, and then do the make install.
It's nice to have your macros and stuff that you put in your regular user account available for navigation.
I'm not sure. He said it's nice to have the macros put into your regular user account.
That's if you don't use the dash. You get all of your environment stuff.
Environments and paths and so forth.
Thing,
right. So if you do have a problem, try su dash, so that you do become root, then you've got to navigate back to your folder. If you want to know a problem, that would be the next thing I would try. Another thing about make install generally prints out where it's putting all this stuff. So it'd be real nice to pipe the output of make install to a file that you can then look to say, oh yeah, put this here and put all this stuff here, so you can see where it put the configuration files. Yeah?
There's a program out called check install.
Check install, yes. In check install, actually, you instead of making make install, you run check install. And the great thing about that is that it will allow you to make a .dev, a .rpm, and a tar.gz?
Yeah, I think Slackware stuff.
So you can actually install it again if need be, or the nice thing is you can do an apt-get remove and give it that dev file that it produces and take it back off the system, so you don't have to go in there and remove all the files that make install has put all over the system. Yes?
If you want to see what you did with the installer, you can run script. It will give you a transcript.
If you want to see what it does, you can run script.
Script will keep track of all the stuff that's going on the screen.
Oh, before you run, okay.
Yeah.
Run script, and everything that you do from that point until you stop it is transcribed.
Very good idea. I thought you were saying that you could run script and see what already happened. But yeah, that's the you got to run script first, then you're making install.
I recommend running script before ./configure. Mm-hmm. Because when you run ./configure, what it does, what ./configure does is it creates a whole bunch of little tiny C files. And every C file will try to include 1.h file or something like that. And we're trying to link up to a library. But sometimes that thing scrolls past so fast, you can't see that it missed one, right? And, oh, I couldn't find this or couldn't find that or something like that. So if you run script first, right, you can scroll back through that list and get it.
There you go.
You can also pipe it through T.
I worked it.
Yeah, but the script, once you've remembered to run the script, which is the first thing to forget, once you have remembered to run script, then everything is transcribed and you don't have to remember to do the key on this one as well as the previous one.
Yeah, script actually puts it into a file that you can review later. And you can tell it which file. There is a default file that it puts it in, which I can't remember the name of, but I think it tells you that.
It's in the man page.
It's in the man page.
And you can change the name if you want to.
There's
right.
A shitty option.
There you go. Okay.
Bill? Carl?
Yeah.
As an alternative to the check install program, There's another one out there called SCODE, S-C-O-W.
So the name of the program is S-C-O-W?
Yeah.
And how does that differ from Check Install?
Well, Check Install, in effect, like I say, creates like a dev package out of the program.
Okay.
So kind of automates putting everything in a certain directory. I think like user local or something like that. And it just kind of keeps it there, and then it creates all these symlinks back to where you have your usual like bin piles. So if you ever want to get rid of it, it's just like all in this one place. And you can run the Stoke command and unlinks the symbolic links or whatever and you know, erases it. And it's all done.
Stoke.
So Stowe puts it in a particular, the output puts it all in one directory and then creates the links that would have been ordinarily, where they would ordinarily be.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, it's just, you know, a variation that somebody didn't want to mess around with Check Install or whatever. They might want to investigate Stowe.
S-T-O-W.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, I forgot to mention, he's talking about Stowe does all this for you. Does it do the same with Check Install? It actually creates a dev file or whatever that you then install. So if you're on Fedora, you want it to make an RPM file, then when you get done, then you got to do RPM-UVH and the name of that dev file to actually install it. So it doesn't do the install for you. It creates an install package so that you can then easily remove it later on. And one other thing I might mention, I found this out the hard way, is Check Install does not only makes it so you can install it on your own machine. You take that file and go to another machine, it doesn't work. So you really want to run Check Install is for the installation on the machine that you're on. If you need to make a dev package, then that's far beyond the scope of tonight's topic. So now we're past the make install. Install is root. And here, if you're fairly competent, you can run this /configure --make --sudo if you've got sudo make install. What does that do? It does it all to begin with. If you have a problem with /configure and it bombs, it doesn't do any of this. So you can go back and fix this. But I would suggest using script definitely before you run this. If you get this far to make and it bombs, it's not going to make install something that doesn't exist. So it's a very quick way to get the package, a very quick way to test to see if the package is going to install. Earlier, Jim said something about if you prefer to keep your insanity, don't compile. Most of the time, with Linux, it's fairly okay. When you get into other Unixes and you're trying to compile a Linux written program, which most of them are, you can run into a lot of problems. BSD is typically FreeBSD, OpenBSD, I don't know about NetBSD, but they have a system called ports. Basically, the ports are constantly being updated for that particular version of the distribution. The ports give you configure files that are already tested to work, or generally will work. They get rid of the instructions or redo the instructions, the C instructions that may cause problems during make. So generally that takes some of the onerous out of it, trying to convert a program written for Linux on another Unix. So I think at this point we have
ports of those source that's been set up to be portable, or do you get binary, or do you recompile each time?
Ports automatically do a fetch and a compile.
Fetch and compile. So you really are compiling there, but it's set up to where it's a lot easier than.
Yeah, you don't have everything on your computer. It simply has pre-configured configures that go out and get what you need. Quite often you'll find that QEMU, you compile that, well, it needs this graphics library, and it needs this library over here, and not so much that it may not be on your computer, but it needs the development libraries that need to be compiled first before that will work. If you have ever experienced problems with RPMs where you tried to install something and it said, can't install it because this package isn't installed, or the package that you've got is the wrong one, or in Debian where you did an WASG install something and it says, well, it's not going to be installed because package is needed, install package is this, you know, so it won't be installed. Well, now you know where that comes from, and that's from compiling stuff.
What's that word you're saying, WASG?
Okay, I'm sorry. For those people who didn't see my absolutely wondrous secret presentation last month. Was it last month?
Yes.
Last month. The secrets of WASG. It's on the website, but WASG is a Swiss Army knife. It's kind of like Conqueror is in KDE. It's a Swiss Army knife for apt or depackaged systems. It allows you to do everything that you could possibly do with the Debian package system in English that you can understand. So look it up. And WASG is a very good way to do it. Stuff like the upgrade. We all know in Debian that you're going to upgrade. You got to do apt-get-update, let that run through, and then you got to go apt-get-upgrade, or if you got problems, then you got to run apt-get-dist-upgrade. WASG does all that for you with one command, WASG daily-upgrade, and it goes and gets the headers, checks to make all the associations. If it needs a dist upgrade, it'll do a dist upgrade instead of just an upgrade, and then it'll sit there and ask you, do you want to go ahead and do it? You hit yes, and it does everything. So you can actually do WASG-Y or yes, daily-upgrade, put it in script, and you've got the latest screw-ups, I mean the latest additions of everything pulled down from your repositories. That's for the people who like to have the latest and greatest problems.
Features,
yeah. I'm sorry, features. Well, I'm being recorded, aren't I? I should be. Okay. And there, now we come to that point where everybody can be really silent when I say, are there any questions? Oh, that means I gave a bad demo. Either I gave a really bad talk, or I told you everything you needed to know. Well, we can throw out the ladder, so all right, okay. Thank you very much. So how did I do for time? I forgot my watch.
Clock on the wall.
Clock on the wall. Holy cow.
5 after. But you're doing good.
Forget my age.
That was Carl Fitch, our president.